Welcome to Proudly Resents, a podcast about cult films and good, bad films, where we talk about our favorite films and interview people. Basically, it's film jitsu or we hate movies. We are in San Francisco in the Darkroom Theater. I am Adam Spiegelman. We are here with the co-owner,
Your wife's not here. I'm Jim Forniotis.
And my brother Mike Spiegelman.
Hi, Adam. How's it going?
Good. Tonight we proudly resent Red Dawn, which is a significant value.
Wolverines!
Jim, why is this important to you and your theater here?
It's the first movie we showed at Bad Movie Night.
What's Bad Movie Night?
A Bad Movie Night is something we have every Sunday night at 8 o'clock. We show a bad movie on purpose. We charge $5, and everyone's allowed to yell at the screen. Popcorn is free, and I play banjo, and we just pretty much have a good time ragging on a film.
Just for to clear it up, they pay $5 to hear you play banjo, and then you happen to play a movie.
Right, because we couldn't show a movie that we didn't own the copyrights to, because that's wrong.
Right, so I'm glad you cleared that up.
And there's three people heckling on the microphones.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of like Mystery Science Theater, only we couldn't afford robots.
So there's three main people down the front with microphones, and then the rest of the audience can yell at what they like. Some great, some terrible. Doesn't matter. It's like you just throw 1,000 things, and a few of them are fun.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's hard to like make value judgments on things when you're considering the movies that were screened. And it's got to be better than the dialogue on screen. So
yeah, it's not someone's going to say, that joke was awful.
Compared
that's
to
man, that's better than toys. Or
more importantly, no one's going to say, hey, could you guys keep it down? I'm trying to listen to the movie.
Right. One of the cool things you do is you put the closed caption up so you can see what, if you can't hear it, you can still read the terrible dialogue.
Those are the people who, in shame, are trying to actually enjoy the film and don't want to admit it because it would be uncool.
Where's the best place to sit in the theater? Front, back, middle?
That's far away from me.
Well, you know, there is bleacher seating in the back, so if you're in the back, you have a clear view. But, you know, if you're up front in the masses, that's even better.
Well, the odd thing that happens is that, especially on the night when we have it packed, and that, believe me, that happens more often than not. You should have seen it when we showed Geely.
Turned people away.
I had to turn people away at the door. But when it's really packed and there's a crowd full of vocal people, it ends up becoming zoned. And like by the end of the back of the theater, they're telling their own jokes, and we hear them laughing at different times than us. And like, what the hell's going on back there?
Yeah, that's
like,
the thing.
Somebody go back there and break it up, you know?
You got to keep, I mean, the audience is the show as well. So when the audience starts riffing and they're funnier or they're on a better tangent, you know, I always have to listen and go along with what's the funniest in the room.
Hey, you guys sit on the mic, Mike, you do this. You'll repeat a good joke that you hear behind you.
And the way I repeat it is that you have to repeat it like I just heard it from somebody. Do you know what I mean? Like
Not me. I take credit.
Jim doesn't give a shit. It's his theater.
Do I look like I give a shit?
But so the first movie you did, Jim, was Red Dawn?
Red Dawn, yeah. And the funny thing is that, Mystery Science Theater was kind of an inspiration. But to be honest, you know, we used to do that. And when I was like a teenager, we used to just kind of hang out and get baked and watch. Back before cable, they showed movies on TV. And they showed usually crappy ones in the afternoon because they didn't have like, they couldn't even afford that many reruns. TV used to be a whole lot fucking different back in the 70s, you know, and then 60s.
Well, you know, you grew up in Flint, but Adam and I, being from Tri-State...
I grew up in Jersey. I moved to Flint.
So there was a 4:30 movie on Channel 7 before Live at 5.
Yeah, exactly.
So they would show a week's worth of Elvis movies, a week's worth of Godzilla movies.
But even on Channel 9 and Channel 11, they would show crappy like sci-fi movies and stuff like that in the afternoon. Or the old black and whites and stuff like that. So
networks, the affiliates own these movies, the libraries of their own films, so it was cheap for them to show an Elvis movie they own.
So we would sit around and make jokes. And when Mystery Science Theater came on, in a way I felt kind of bad because I thought to myself, I feel incredibly lazy. Here's a bunch of guys getting baked, making jokes for me. You know, so I don't have to exert any effort to like think of anything funny.
That's like buying chopped mushrooms. I always feel guilty, but it's so much easier.
Exactly. Yeah. How hard is it to chop a mushroom?
You mean
it's the same price.
You know, yeah. But I would say that, you know, so me and we had our first bad movie night, you know, like about a year or two after they started that back in Michigan, where it was just like about 20 of us hanging out and we would rotate at people's houses. It was almost like book club, only it was like bitch at this fucking movie
right,
club.
Right, but no literature.
Yeah, exactly. No literature involved. You know, we did when I came to San Francisco and we started the Darkroom, I thought to myself it would be kind of fun to like do this again, so.
I think the significant thing to what you guys do in Wolverines, a.k.a. Red Dawn, and your movie night is that you guys do popular films instead of doing like Mystery Science Theater. Obviously, they did old movies that they get the rights to, but and you just steal them. But you guys do like popular movies. Is it conscious effort?
Yeah, well, we were trying to do something a little different. I mean, you know, we could do Mystery Science Theater. I could dress up Mike in a robot outfit.
So where do we know?
I'm a furry, no robot outfit.
So we did something different. We decided, why not go for the jugular, for the movies that are out now, that they spent a lot of money out to, and they're promoting right at this moment. And usually we get them when they're just about when they're coming to DVD. So they're desperately trying to unload these turkeys onto DVD, hoping someone will buy them and watch them because they didn't make good in the theater. So that's usually what we put up.
So you can go to the 7th anniversary of Bad Movie Night at the Darkroom Theater in San Francisco this Sunday. I'm putting it up on this week, yeah. This episode, change the schedule around. For a couple reasons. One, to promote you, Jim, and also...
Thank you.
Charlie Sheen is in this movie, and I want to get all the Charlie Sheen jokes out before they're not
exhausted.
Relevant anymore.
I'm totally exhausted.
I mean, they're already wearing down.
It's like this is like written for you. There's a scene where they're giving like deer's blood to see Thomas Howell. It's just kind of like, you know, tiger's blood the whole
thing. Are we talking about, so they kill a deer, and the brothers, but Charlie Sheen tells them to drink deer blood.
So let's start with the plot of the film. We'll start way at the beginning. And the movie starts right at the beginning. There's not a lot of setup.
No, it's a lot of title cards up front explaining this history that just occurred, and it's bad news.
Oh, see, that was reading. I didn't really get into it. I just assumed we had no idea why this happened.
Words, words, words.
Well, in the future, U.S. blew up the United States. I don't remember, something like that.
It's World War III is happening, basically, in a small Midwest town, and these kids, a bunch of high school kids, all good-looking, all these jocks, are going to save the day. Everyone else gets shot immediately, except for the good-looking kids.
Except for the men getting rounded up into the internment camp.
Yes, the re-education camp, where they show like Michael Moore movies on the
That's right.
And they want to strangle themselves, yeah. But you know what it is? Like, this movie is a fantasy, a Red State fantasy.
It's like a fucking teabagger. It's like the teabagger's Lawrence of Arabia.
Do you mean it's like those alternative historians that go, well, gee, what if the Nazis won World War I?
No. I think it's not even alternative. It's like... politics and teabaggers now saying, like, you got to have guns. In Arizona, when people got shot and people died, they said, well, if they had guns, they could have shot back.
Right.
Well,
which is funny because there was actually a guy there with a gun who almost shot one of the heroes. It was just kind of like, I was there, I was loaded, I was ready to go, but I didn't know what was happening. I saw someone holding a gun, and I almost shot him. And they almost shot the fucking hero who, like, disarmed the fucking shooter.
Right, because he's a civilian, and civilians shouldn't have guns.
Exactly. This is like, yeah, the fantasy of a gun owner. It's just like, if I only could keep my guns, when the Ruskies come, we can take them out.
Right.
You know, with me and my fucking Glock and my hunting rifle, we can stand up to the tanks.
Well, this movie came out in, what, 83, 84, and I think it came out after the television special The Day After, which was kind of a lefties fantasy of what if the nukes happened, what happens? And that was very kind of politically heavy-handed. And I know there was another miniseries called America.
3 Ks.
Yeah.
3 Ks.
Yeah.
And it's with Chris Christopherson, and it was like, what if the Russians had taken over the United States? And it was a righty version fantasy, I guess. So this movie is definitely like knee-deep in...
It had everything to be a hit 80s film. It had... The Cold War fear that we all had at the time, that the Russians were just going to kill us. And in this movie, it's the Russians and the Cubans, because that makes it even scarier.
The Cubans are taking over.
Yeah, but what they did was they made it better looking. They gave us C. Thomas Howell and Charlie Sheen and Patrick Swayze.
And Jennifer Grey.
And Leah Thompson.
And Leah Thompson.
Yeah. Jennifer Old Nose Jennifer Grey, which is...
Old Nose Leah Thompson.
Oh, really?
I think so.
You know, and it's funny, what kills me about this film is that it's like, they basically, every paranoid wingnut fantasy that could possibly happen
comes true.
It's just kind of, it's just so that basically you can have some guy in the audience with a shotgun going, I told you, see? I told you. I knew that was going to happen. My favorite one is when he goes, go to the local gun store and look at the register and you'll find the owners of all of the guns in this area and go and collect them and kill them, you know? And it's just like, God damn it, I knew I shouldn't have registered my gun.
See that? The government has taken away my animal.
They actually had a bumper sticker that says, you'll take my gun away from me from my cold, dead hands. And then the camera's on the bumper sticker, on a car bumper, and the camera pans down and there's a dead body gripping a gun, and a Soviet grabs a gun, tries to ungrip this gun from this dead cold hand,
and he has to pry it off.
He has to pry it off.
Like
he said,
it's very telling.
The high school gets shot up.
Immediately, there's no.
And the first thing that happens is a brother dies.
Right.
And, you know, the black history teacher, you know, it's just like, he's the first one to go, you know. And he walks out, there's like, they're parachuting down, they've got guns. It's like, excuse me, young man, what do you think you're doing out here? It's like, that's the only realistic part of the movie, is like, the history teacher would be like, I'm sorry, you can't assemble on the lawn.
You need a whole pass.
I'm going to send you to the office.
Ben Stein was busy that week, so they had to hire that guy.
It was free Ben Stein.
Free Ben Stein?
Yeah. He could have been, and Mikey made a funny boy that maybe, there's supposed to be a remake, he should play the history teacher again.
Right.
And walk out again, they shoot him, and he goes like, I'm too old for this shit.
He winks at the camera when he gets shot again.
And in the new version of Red Dawn, I don't know if you know this, and maybe we can talk about the stuff we know, the teachers' unions, it causes the whole thing. Because the teacher unions are so bad, they cause the Ruskies to come down.
I was going to say that's why the Chinese invade, because it's the Chinese. They invade because they're, like, screwing the economy because the teachers are trying to negotiate.
Did you notice that all the Russians that get shot and fall down hills, they're all actually American stuntmen, part of a guild. And I don't know if that's intentional or not.
See that?
They're all tied together.
Yeah.
But the Russians come in and the Cubans and take over America, and just the good-looking jocks get away, and they all jump into this pickup truck.
Chevrolet. I think it's a Chevrolet.
And they go into a gas station where one of the kids' dads owns, and they go into the store, and he says, go in the store and grab sleeping bags and campers. This gas station has sleeping bags, ammunition, bows and arrows.
But that's not where the Soviets go first.
Yeah, they go to the school, because, you know, the school is going to be a real danger to them. You know, instead they leave, like, the gas and the ammunition alone, you know, it's like, and they actually go back to this place halfway through the movie, and the guy's still there. It's like, oh, yeah, I've been figuring it out. Yeah, they still haven't come to get me.
Yeah, that was a weird thing. He sends the kids out, and he doesn't do anything. He just kind of says, I'm going to stay here, you know, customers come first, you know, don't get hurt, run out. It was a bizarre thing that he didn't go with him or...
Well, he said, go see my friend, and there's, like, a fellow survivalist who has this huge ranch, which has livestock and horses and guns and mason jars full of jams on the walls. There's no books in the Midwest, by the way.
Yeah, fuck books. That's what causes this problem, the history teacher.
Yeah, that's the first thing that happens when the Russians take over, is there's a book burning.
Yeah.
You see, it's really clear. Just to remind you that the Russians are evil.
Well, the Americans were there with drinking beer and wooting and hollering. You know, they're actually joining in.
It seemed like this movie is so, like, right-wing political that in the internment camps in this movie, they're watching these propaganda films telling them how bad America is.
Right, showing these movies.
But I feel like if this ever happened in real life, they would show Red Dawn to Americans. They're like, this is why you have to kill anyone else but us, or anyone not in our interest.
They'll probably show the remake. Now, I have this movie was the first PG-13 movie, and I'm pretty sure of it, because I remember Dreamscape, which Inception Jr. was supposed to be the first PG-13 movie, and Red Dawn came. If you watch this movie, there's a body count in this movie of about 56 people, at least. I mean, they're shooting civilians, execution style, and this movie would never make it past PG-13 rating nowadays. And I think when they reboot it, it's just going to look... Everyone's going to be prettier, everyone's going to be more anonymous actor-wise, and it's just going to be pretty shot, and
there's going to be a lot of emo in the soundtrack.
It's a lot of killing. I mean, I think this is one of the most violent films. Last time the three of us got together, Jim and I, we watched Trax, which is an over-the-top violent film, on purpose, and this is just as bad. I don't know, Jim, I think you're the bad influence on this situation.
Yeah. Well, it's just because, I mean, like, really, there's really no end to the stupidity of this movie. At every turn, they take the route that is, like, the most cartoonish and unlikely. And they kind of, like, you know, they seem proud of it.
Yeah.
Now, this movie was before CGI, so all the tanks and all the military stuff, that's being shot live in the desert. And it reminds me of the films of its time. I think of Deal of the Century with Chevy Chase, where he's an arms salesman and they have all these crazy tanks and bombs, and it's terrible. You know, it doesn't look good. And here's a movie where it has this excess, and it actually works. You know, like, they're supposed to have all these tanks here. The Soviets took over. You know, it's supposed to have all this weaponry, explosions, you know.
Right, it looked good. And these kids go out in the woods, and they become... essentially all go crazy. I mean, I think that's the plot of the film.
The movie starts off with C. Thomas Howell being the young kid who's, like, completely innocent. He's basically Pony Boy from, like, the Outsiders, you know, but now trapped, you know, behind his enemy lines with the Soviets. And they kill a deer because, of course, they need to eat, right? So they're hunters, right? They've been hunting.
This is the same.
So in that scene, basically, he kills his first deer, and Charlie Sheen gets him to drink the blood, because, of course, that's all Charlie Sheen does, I guess, is drink blood.
Deer blood, yeah.
And he says to him in a very, very heavy-handed way, you know, the script writer, like, speaking loudly through the voice of the actors, once you drink that blood, it changes you. You take on the spirit of the deer. And it's just kind of, you could just see, like, them, like, the acting, like, really, like, oozing off of the screen.
Yeah, he sips it.
He sips it. He has something that looks really strange, just like a little... Something comes over us, and suddenly he becomes bloodthirsty, and he's got a little bit of blood trick on that. He's like, it's not so bad. Yeah. It's like halfway through the film, he's like, you know, he's completely crazy. He's got a bottle of ye olde blood, yeah. And he's like just chugging it, but like, you know, come on, it's cool.
I swear to God, I was half expecting Super Troopers come out going, ah, you fell for the drink to deer blood bit. I can't believe you did it.
So the spirit of this deer was an asshole cokehead?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know if that's true. I don't want the deer to sue me. Yeah, so he kind of goes crazy, and then he becomes a cold-blooded killer. Mm-hmm. They go to this survivalist place, and the guy says, I want to... He's very helpful. His old guy is helping them, and he says, you can come back whenever you want, which is a weird thing.
Weird, like they'll be back.
It's one of those invitations you don't mean, because they're never coming back. You know, they're being chased by Russians.
Right.
He's like, listen, everyone knows who you are. Everybody wants to kill you. Whenever you want to come and hang out, sit by the pool.
Well, it's the last ditch. They're such survivalists. Like, you know, when you have one leg and they're shooting at you and you have to go someplace, come here, I'll help you out. Hey, but otherwise, fuck off.
Well, you know, we'll grill, give me a heads up. So he says, let me give you my family heirlooms. And the wife goes, oh, no, don't. He goes in, opens the basement.
The cellar.
Underneath the floor, and there's
two women,
Leah Thompson and Jennifer Grey.
And Charlie Sheen goes, ah, goddesses.
Jim, you had your chance earlier in this podcast.
But it was softballed with that. Yeah, they were standing right there.
Well, because everyone's so serious. You know, men don't cry. Their father, so it's Patrick Swayze and Martin Sheen are brothers.
Charlie Sheen.
But their father is Harry Dean Stanton, and he gives this speech from the internment camp about, you know, this is the last time you ever cry.
Don't cry.
Don't think about your mother. It's wasted time.
Like, yeah, I mean, it's like, it's again, this is like the heavy-handed thing. It's like, you know, he goes, remember when you were little and you were on a swing and you fell down? Well, I won't be there to pick you up this time. And of course, at some point, they end up back at the swing
right.
set.
Well, he says,
shot. And he's like, he tries to pick him up. It's like, no, I have. It's like, thank you, script.
Well, no, he says, you brothers will have to pick each other up. And exactly. They look at each other. So sure enough, at the end, they're literally picking each other up.
Everything about this movie is just like bizarro. Like, you know, like they find him at this re-education camp where they're showing the propaganda films. And, you know, there's a chain link fence and there's no guards whatsoever. I mean, what's to stop these guys from hopping the fence and taking
it's
off?
It's like every
they're
tribe
able to walk
I've been
up.
Into.
They're able to walk up and go, hey, let me yell. Can you find my father? Does anybody know where my dad is? And
sure.
There's guys standing by with guns who can't right. hear them at all.
And
know?
His father's limping and he's like, I'll be right there. No, guys.
And then he's like, and he goes, go. And then after they walk away a couple of paces, he screams after them, Avenge me! It's just so that the guards haven't heard him up until now.
That was a prick.
Now they know exactly where he's at.
Who? These guys?
That was such a prick move because Harry Dean Stanton gives this bloodless, patriotic speech about how you are not a civilian and you're part of this country and don't cry. Oh, and avenge me.
You know what? All I said was bullshit.
Yeah, bullshit.
They're about to fucking kill me. I'm out. Yeah, this movie is riddled with father issues. This is
it's
a town
Reagan.
Of shitty fathers.
It's Reagan. You know, one of the reasons that makes this movie so bad is that time has passed this movie by. Not only has the wall broken down, but this kind of like right-wing paranoia, this Reagan paranoia. And it's interesting because most movies of that time always had the bomb and nuclear explosion. And in this movie, they say, oh, they can't blow up each other with bombs because we're on our soil. So suddenly the nuclear weapons are negated in this issue. It's just the Russians have taken over, which is this fantasy, and you kind of go. But, you know, there's no Russians anymore. I don't know what they're going to do for the remake. North Korea or maybe just use
China.
China?
China, yeah. Probably what happened, I'm going to guess, is that we didn't pay our bill.
They're coming
to take it out of our
ass. So the original movie offends Cubans and Russians this generation.
Now I'm just reading the storyline of the remake. Is a group of teenagers look to save their town from an invasion of Chinese and Russian soldiers.
Oh.
So they got rid of the Cubans, and they brought in the Chinese. This movie has a pretty good cast. Josh Hutcherson's done a bunch of stuff. Josh Peck.
Well, who's Josh Hutcherson? Oh, you're talking about the remake?
The remake. The lead is Chris Hemsworth, who I don't know who that is. Adrian Pilecki.
Okay, but not one of them is Charlie Sheen or Patrick Swayze.
Yeah, that's the thing about this movie, that I guess it's hindsight, but a lot of, you know, this was like The Outsiders and a lot of early films where, like, blockbuster actors appear in ensemble films.
Well, I don't know, but yeah. not all of them. I'm talking to Steve Thomas
Howell. Well, we're talking about, like, Dirty Dancing.
They all just did big movies.
Patrick, he did Soul Man, and he made another film, The Hitcher, so he kind of made movies.
No, this is before Soul Man.
This is before Soul Man?
Oh, yeah.
Well, all right, so then he blossomed. 12 in this. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of like The Outsiders where they cast all these great actors.
Yeah, great actors. I mean, like, you look at Dirty Dancing, which had Patrick Swayze and Jennifer Grey. That movie became a phenomenon. And it's just the same leads are in this movie, just happened to be in
the
ensemble.
Oh, it seemed like the same people were cast in the 80s films over and over again, the same young actors.
Same C. Thomas Howell is always in it.
Always... Balthazar Getty shows up in random films. And you know, some of them take off, and some of them didn't take. You know, Rob Lowe was in a lot of these films. He took off, and even after, they did a lot of ensemble films. Yeah, I think this film's a big political. It's such a fantasy. Like, if the Ruskies came on our soil, you know, I would go kick their ass. And this is a movie that's going to prove how and why that I would do it.
Can I pick up Inglourious Basterds just for a second?
This is a lot like Inglourious Basterds.
Well, the villain speaks three languages. So the villain, who, by the way, at one point you hear his voice narrating a letter he's writing home. Like, this movie's a little schizophrenic about who the POV is, but he speaks Russian, he's from Cuba, speaks Spanish, Cuban Spanish, and he speaks fluent English as well. And he's cunning. And he actually, at one point, gives a pass to those guys. I'm giving away the ending. Which is kind of similar to the cunning bastard in Inglourious Basterds, right? I mean, like, he kind of gives a pass. And also, that movie is a revisionist history. It's like, what if Jews were Kill Bill and decided to seek revenge?
I feel like when you bring up Inglourious Basterds, it's a total ripoff of Red Dawn. Because Red Dawn's the same thing. Like, Inglourious Basterds are, what if Jews kick some ass? And it's like, what if we kick some ass to save our own people?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the same, and they're kind of the same setup a little bit. You know, you introduce who the people are. Obviously, the styles are 100% different, but you have people underneath the floor, a girl underneath the floor being hidden.
But it's the same exploitation film. I mean, you're there to see this war, alternative war history and revenge story, which they exploit. So they both do it successfully, I guess.
Do you have anything else we'll wrap up on this film?
Just that we show it every year. It's one of three films that we show every year. We show this, and in the beginning of the year, we show Snakes on a Plane. Just because that's pretty much about the most ridiculous film ever made, just from the title down. And at Christmas, we show It's a Wonderful Life, just because it pisses everybody off.
Do you hate It's a Wonderful Life as much as
Snakes on a Plane? Let me put it this way. It's I don't really hate any of these films. I mean, if I hated this movie, I wouldn't watch it every year. But it's dumb, so it's easy to make fun of. And I'll say the same about It's a Wonderful Life. It's dumb, and it's easy to make fun of. I mean, you think about that movie, there's all kinds of, like, dumb stereotypes and implausible situations. And it's really, frankly, it's kind of ridiculous.
Flex Alexander is very funny in this movie, and I think he deserves a little credit.
Well, I don't understand. How young was he in It's a Wonderful Life?
Flex Alexander. Are you guys...
Oh, he's in Snakes on a Plane. What about this film? You've seen this film at least 7 or 8 times, and you were happy to see it again. What have you noticed after seeing it so many times?
Well, it never ceases to amaze me how dumb it is. And I always enjoy watching people's reactions who aren't really that familiar with the film. Like, really?
Was.
They actually did that? That's what this movie's about?
Can I give a shout out, please, to Powers Booth, who's in this movie, his character actor, Powers Booth, who shows up, as you said, as a suntan Bob Hope. And this movie's very humorless.
That was Powers Booth?
Yeah. That was Powers Booth, yeah.
Wow. He looks like Bob Hope, right?
And sounds like him, yeah.
But it's funny because they're very humorless, and when he lands there, they don't know who he is, and Patrick Swayze says, you flew? He goes, I was a flyer. 5 against 1. And Swayze gives him like a, and he goes, I got 4 of them. And they all go, ha! And it reminds me, like, he is Bob Hope. He's the only thing they'll laugh at, you know?
Yeah, they're telling jokes. Ah, I got it. You see the other 4 guys. And where's his plane?
You never see it.
Jennifer Grey finds... is it Jennifer Grey or Leah Thompson?
No, it's Leah Thompson.
Finds his American fighter pilot.
Yeah.
And has a really creepy crush on him.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like, talks to the other kids about, like, hey, maybe I should hook up with her. Like,
can I bang your sister? Is it your sister?
Is it your sister? That's your cool, sister? Right?
Yeah, it's cool.
Was she 16?
Oh, it's not your sister?
Oh, then I'll stay away. Yeah, it was creepy that's the love stories between the 16-year-old and this 30-year-old.
Well, he's a military man. You know, he's a U.S. fighter pilot, and... I don't know. I got nothing. That was really creepy and scary.
Yeah, it was creepy. Like, because you assume it would be like a love story between Patrick Swayze and one of these girls.
And when he gets shot, spoiler, he gets shot. When he gets shot, Leah Thompson cries and goes, "I'll never love anyone again." And then crazy ass C. Thomas Howell, like chugging the blood, comes up and goes, "It's okay to love somebody. Otherwise, you're not really alive."
Oh, can we mention
words of wisdom from Blood Boy?
Yeah.
Blood Boy, by the way, early in the film, he was wearing a baseball cap that said Star Wars on it. And I have to reference that.
So they start out with like 8 people or more, and then 8 teenagers, and now we're down to the last 4. And
yeah.
Charlie Sheen, Patrick Swayze, the two brothers, and then Leah Thompson and some guy, like some red shirt guy that didn't get killed for some reason. And Patrick Swayze says, "Charlie Sheen and I are going to go off to the town and blow up as many people as we can," which just seemed weird that they're not going to save the day, but they're going to put a dent.
Well, they're going to create a distraction so those two can get away.
So they can start a civilization again. But she's like, no, don't go, because I'd be upset. Like, oh, really? Now you don't want to, because I'm the last guy, literally last guy on Earth? You know, she's like, no, I'll take Charlie Sheen. Why don't you take this dark red shirt guy, and I'll take the good-looking Estevez brother.
Yeah, yeah, right. She dodged a bullet there.
Oh, yeah. In the sequel, she's like, "Oh, thank God, I didn't get the crazy."
I thought that one. What was I thinking?
Oh, I got the stable guy with the job and the mind for numbers.
When he said, "I'm gonna go, I'll be right back. I'm gonna go blow up the town," I should have realized he was crazy.
We were all just hanging out drinking deer's blood.
No,
it was a different time.
Charlie Sheen looks really sadly at them as they're departing, and she goes, and he goes, "We can't come with you. We're all used up."
Yeah, this 16-year-old kid.
Yeah, right.
We're all used up.
Yeah, they've seen the horrors of war.
It was like a war movie with teenagers. It was kind of like Little Rascals, where they had Little Rascals act.
Well,
like
you were saying because they don't sound like lived in. They don't really. They don't. The words are too big for them when they're giving
these
are
Hollywood
speeches.
Teenagers giving these speeches that were written for. They were originally written for like Steel Helmet and other war films for guys who've seen shit.
And even Charlie Sheen at that point was like, what? It was like in his early 20s, so he was just really mentally unstable. He wasn't like batshit crazy.
Well, what was he doing? Like, what was he, Charlie Sheen, doing back then in 1983? He was
probably
doing
cocaine.
Two for the Road. Yeah. Movie wise, he showed up in Ferris Bueller in 87. Oh, it's with Jennifer Grey. There you go. That's another
thing.
He did
a scene with Jennifer Grey.
Yeah.
Well, of course, like the evil Russian general who comes and shows up is the guy from The Apple.
He's
the guy who
plays
the devil in The Apple.
Another great film. Yeah, I think it seemed like they would, and it happens now. Like, you see comedies, and it stars either Jack Black, Seth Rogen, or whatever, you know, whoever gets on the comedy wheel. And if you fall off the wheel quickly, you're out. Otherwise, you're still on that wheel. So it still happens today with the same people in a lot of these films.
Yeah.
I mean, even the people in the remake.
Yeah, but my question is, will the people in the remake break out? Like, has there been a film, like, I know Clueless is a good recent example, even though it's 15 years old. Where a movie has an ensemble that they break out, you know.
Well, I think the best example of that, is an old example, is Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
That's a great one.
That's another one. And also Breakfast Club is another one, too.
Breakfast Club. Well, they're a little bit more famous.
American Graffiti,
totally unknown.
American Graffiti is kind of the landmark one.
Yeah, American Graffiti had...
Dazed and Confused.
Wait, who's in American Graffiti?
Richard Dreyfuss, Harrison Ford, Sidney Williams, Ron Howard... that guy who directs Half and Half, the Lil Weasley guy with the glasses.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Charles Half Nelson. I forget his three names. But the point is, he's a
Charles
movie
Nelson Reilly?
No. Wolfman Jack plays himself.
He was a big thing.
And Bowser.
Mackenzie Phillips was in that, too.
Mackenzie Phillips, yeah.
Yeah. And then,
We're James LaGrosse, right? Or whatever, the gearhead in that movie. He's a famous actor. He didn't do too shabby.
He was in Howard and Melvin.
Howard, yeah. And more American Graffiti.
Well, wow. And then you were saying, Big Chill is another one. That
Big Chill had a lot of big people in there.
So, yeah, a lot of these films, especially in the 80s, a lot of these films came out and blew people up. But this movie, Mike, would you recommend Red Dawn?
I would watch it, definitely, and understand that it's a part of history as well as pop culture history, that these views came from the 80s, and it was a fantasy that came out of the 80s that it would be very difficult to kind of reproduce now because it's of its time, so it's enjoyable for that, and I don't think the reboot's going to capture that.
So you say yes to them?
Yes.
Jim?
I think you should watch it because I think it's important to understand, because everything that's wrong with America now comes from the same mindset that made this movie. So all of the teabaggers and all of the crazy people and everything, it's just like, I tell you, it's all because of Red Dawn.
You can see, they almost quote the film. They could show the film in propaganda.
Exactly. You know, just the whole, from my cold dead hands, you know, the whole vibe. It's just like, you gotta watch this movie because when you see how crazy people were back then, you understand how white people are crazy these days. You know, it's just, it seems like at first you watch it, at first blush, it's just kind of like, no, this, they never could have thought that this was actually going to happen. But, you know, really, the shit that people think are going to happen these days or think is actually happening is even more nuts. So, yeah, watch it.
It's a great movie, and I say go see it. It's a little weird.
Favorite line?
Yeah.
Just give me a grenade.
Oh, yeah, it's Jennifer Grey?
Yeah, she's been shot, and she says, kill me. And Patrick Swayze just can't pull the trigger, and she goes, that's okay.
That's
just
okay.
Give me a grenade.
She does say, shoot me in the face. Oh, it's okay.
It's okay.
But then she says, just give me a grenade, because she's become such a crazy weapons expert. Just like Tarantino, she hides a grenade underneath her body. And then when the enemy goes to pick her up, she sets off the grenade.
That was Inglourious Basterds?
It feels like it.
Yeah.
I mean, if it wasn't, it will be in
the I didn't think about that. They really did steal that from Red Dawn, didn't they?
They stole a lot
of shit from Red Dawn.
Except Red Dawn did have some emotion to it. It talks about brothers and family and this and that and an American go-how. I mean, it has some emotion in there, which makes it even worse.
That's true.
Well, if you have an opinion about the film, you've seen it, you want to see it, you know anything that we said incorrectly, go to our website, proudlyresents.com, to find out how to call into our phone line or write us at reachadam@mac.com. Twitter is @ReachAdam. Go to our website for other contact information.
Or come to the Darkroom Theater and tell me yourself. We're at darkroomsf.com.
And it's $5 to get in, and if you say Proudly Resents, it'll be $6.
So. Yes, and you get free popcorn, unless you say Proudly Resents.
Then the popcorn.
Then you have to pay for the popcorn.
You have to pay for the popcorn. All right, thank you very much. Michael Spiegelman, thank you very much for your website. You. I know you're chomping at the bit. I see you almost jumping into the microphone.
I gotta get it in there.
What's the name of your website? We're out of time. And
thank you for
that. That's been a lot of fun. LuggageTuesdays.com has everything on there.
It's a very funny website. You should check that out. And Jim, your website is
DarkroomSF.
DarkroomSF.com. Yeah. Thanks. That's it. Next week, we'll skip a week.
Bye-bye.
Like I did that. All right, thanks.